If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The Royal Institute of British Architects names its three presidential contenders: a US property price slump cast doubts over London's residential market, the City Corporation is urged not to demolish the old Museum of London, and the row over a prime ministerial treehouse at Chequers while thousands of homes lay vacant in the capital. My name is Merlin Fulcher and I'm an architectural journalist, and I'll be bringing you a roundup of this week's top London architecture news. Welcome to The Lundown. My guest this week here at Bureau and Design District is Muyiwa Oki. Muyiwa is a candidate for the RIBA presidency and an architect working at Mace. Welcome to the show.
Hi Merlin, thank you for having me on the show.
The Royal Institute of British Architects, the RIBA, has named the three candidates in the running to be its next president, including our guest this week, Muyiwa Oki. The AJ has published a comprehensive look at each of the candidates, as well as handy interviews with all three people in the running. The candidates, who each had to receive at least 60 nominations from chartered RIBA members to get on the ballot, also include Allies & Morrison partner Joe Bacon and the author and academic Sumita Singer. The announcement follows a controversial and surprise election rule change that has meant that any recently joined members of the Institute will be barred from voting. Singer, who is standing for a second time after running against the incumbent president Simon Alford in 2020, is the founder of Ecologic and director of environmental design charity Charashilla. She spoke of her plans to urge the RIBA to offer its own professional indemnity insurance to firms undertaking risky projects and to improve diversity within the industry. She also said she would, quote, be a rebel president and make trouble in seeking to tackle climate change, which she said was top of the agenda. Bacon, speaking to the AJ, stressed the importance of embracing the design challenges of the climate crisis by urging all members to adopt the RIBA 2030 challenge. She said, quote, areas that need working on include the definition of net zero carbon, new circular economy models, and toolkits for renovation of existing domestic building stock. We must lobby the government effectively, but at the same time upskill our members, said Bacon. The outsider of the three, Oki, who has not yet been elected to the Institute's Governing Council and was nominated as an architectural worker candidate by campaigners including the Future Architects Front, said, quote, the plan is to energise the RIBA in unprecedented ways, such as putting workers first through flexible membership and RIBA standards policing. The winner will be announced at the start of August following a one-month voting period between 28th of June and 26th of July. They will be president-elect for 1 year, working with the incumbent leader before serving as president for 2 years, beginning in September 23. So, Muyiwa, alongside architects, a lot of our listeners are people who just love London's built environment heritage and the discussions around architecture and those debates. And some of them, they might not be able to vote for the RIBA president. They might not have even heard of the RIBA president before. Should RIBA presidents be more influential, be more understood more widely? Should it be more relevant?
Yes, and I think that is one of the reasons why there's this galvanizing force to change the industry, because the RIBA needs to be accessible. And in that terms, we need the RIBA members to be across wider spectrums of society, to be on TV, championing and lobbying groups on issues that affect the built environment. And the biggest one so far is the climate emergency. We need to be talking a little bit more about it and how architects can affect that issue.
So a lot of the issues we talk about the show, there are also issues being talked about within the wider industry, are to do with architecture's role with regards to the climate crisis, also inequality on a local and national scale, and obviously the provision of affordable, genuinely affordable housing. What role could and should the RIBA and the RIBA presidency be playing in tackling these massive challenges which impact everybody, especially in a city like London?
The RIBA's position on things matters. That position needs to be made clear to the wider communities. That position needs to be first developed in-house through council, but also we need to be a little bit more agile in the way we are setting standards, because the way we influence is by setting standards. And I believe the RIBA should be engaging more on the international stage. And currently there's a World Urban Forum, the WUF, currently happening in Poland. It's one of those premier global conferences on sustainability and urbanization. And what they urgently need is advisors and experts to plan for the scale of challenge that we face ahead. And I believe that this is where, in things like this, in conferences like this, is where we need to see our representation through the RIBA. I have a colleague who's actually there, but he's there as a town planner, so with the RTPI. And he, in conversations I had over the past couple of days, he's like, there's a distinct lack of architectural representation in these discussions. And if we want to be relevant, on the RIBA needs want to be relevant, it needs to be sitting up and engaging in these public discussions and driving change through on the international stage that also affect national policies.
So imagining you're the RIBA president, 100 days into the job, what would your day look like? What would you be doing? What would you be prioritizing?
One of the first things that I want to prioritize is setting up a town hall. I've been talking about it as like town hall. So that's the first thing that I want to do. Also, I would like to try to set up the organization as a decentralized, devolved structure where you, like I've said, make the regions the stars so that centrally the London UK hub sets up the principle and gives tools to Manchester, the Midlands, the Northeast, the different tools that they need to tackle the issues at hand. So, for example, affordable housing manifests differently in London than it would in Manchester or Birmingham. And while we are in the same city, there are different actors, different clients, and how clients behave are different in these different regions. And it's the members in those regions that know how to lobby better. So I think That conversation needs to happen, and the tools to make that happen is something that I want to get in and embed first in the first 100 days, first year of my presidency.
And as we covered on Lundown before, the RIBA recently held an architecture competition to revamp Portland Place, its extraordinary headquarters in the centre of London. Benedetti Architects won it. That's a project that I guess, if you're president, that's going to be going through planning, tendering, construction. How does that all fit with your vision for the Institute?
Because I'm an outsider, I'm not inside. I don't know the details of that project. It's very hard for me to comment on it. Until I see the details, it's relatively difficult to say anything, yes or no, the continue or not. So I'm just going to wait till that time to have a stance on it, a definite stance on it.
A slump in residential property prices across the pond is painting a worrying picture of what might be to come in the UK as the end of ultra-cheap debt causes the values of homes to tumble by as much as 10%. This week, the Financial Times published an in-depth analysis of what is shaping up to be a worldwide shock to the property market. Listed property stocks have tanked this year, with the US's Dow Jones Real Estate Index down almost 25% since this time last year, and the UK property stocks not far behind, with a 20% decline in the same period. Ronald Dickerman, president of Madison International Realty, a private equity firm investing in property, said, quote, Everyone selling everything is being price chipped by prospective buyers, or else buyers are walking away. I cannot overemphasize the amount of repricing going on in real estate at the moment. The reason, says the FT's George Hammond, is due to rocketing borrowing costs, which is pushing sellers to lower their costs and investors to accept lower returns. In the wake of the pandemic and e-commerce renaissance, office and shop owners have been left bearing the brunt of this downturn, to the degree that some are speculating that the total value of New York's offices may ultimately fall by almost a third. Meanwhile, as the latest twists and turns of the housing market leave some biting their nails, one major retailer has proposed a way forward. Last year, John Lewis Partnership announced plans to deliver 10,000 rental homes over the next 10 years. Half of them will be built using property already within its portfolio. Now they have revealed that Lifshitz, Davidson, Sanderlands and Asale Architecture have become their first architectural appointments. So, Muyiwa, while this is still speculative, it looks like the global property market is hurtling towards a crash. What would this look like for London's built environment and for architects working in this city?
It looks like it's going to be a little bit bleak. What I want to focus on as a champion of architects, like I said, an ambassador of architects, an ambassador of the profession, is that architecture shouldn't be defined as this narrow design of constructing of buildings. It's, if you look at the RIB work stages from 0 to 7, each work stage or work stream is a mode of operation, and we should lean, when times are bad in the construction industry, mainly in the construction industry, we should lean into developing, working with our clients in stage 0, and also in stage 7, which is the post-occupancy end of the REBA stage of work. Work with our clients with to understand how to make their buildings more efficient, but also get, also think about it in their whole property portfolio, sort of macro level, and I think these roles have been sort of carved out by other specialized forces, and I think we should sort of release ourselves from those shackles and work. Effectively work and strive towards working in all the REBA work stages, and be proud to be working in those stages. And that way we can offset the downtimes that might be happening, the hangovers that might be happening that we're seeing with inflation and rising interest rates.
Well, certainly with the last crash, it was delivery of new buildings that really took the hit. You know, we saw thousands of projects going on hold. We saw record numbers of architects being made redundant. And we also saw all kinds of disruption to our townscapes and built environment, you know, projects boarded up and so on and so forth. What could the effect of this latest crash be on housing delivery in London? You know, this is a city which, for better or many would say for worse, is massively dependent on the private sector for most of its housing.
With delivery, new houses might see a shortfall, but also retrofit, because retrofit is something that we all engage in, even in a smaller scale. Retrofit might boom up. And I think one of the reasons, one of the ways in which retrofit might boom when new housing delivery might come to a sort of halt is through getting the 20% VAT tax out of retrofit projects. And I think that's something, a policy that the RIB should campaign on, retrofit first. And by doing that, campaign to get the 20% VAT tax removed so that more of our members could carry on doing more work within the industry when they see a downturn in new housing delivery.
The City of London has been urged to rethink plans by Dilla Scofidio and Renfro and Shepherd Robson to demolish the current home of the Museum of London and the 1970s Bastion House office building. This story was covered in the Evening Standard and the AJ, which has been covering the twists and turns of fate of this iconic Paul and Moyer design building. The Museum of London will close as a visitor attraction at its London Wall site in December in preparation for its relocation to the Smithfield General Market, while Bastion House is due to become vacant next year. Local Barbican residents, heritage bodies and amenity societies expressed concern about the case for demolition, and the campaign group Barbican Call to Action has written an open letter to the corporation raising concerns over the embodied carbon cost of the redevelopment project. The City of London, which has a target to achieve net zero by 2040, has since published the whole life carbon assessment for the project. However, it is still pressing ahead with a proposal to flatten the buildings, despite the option generating more carbon emissions than the alternatives. The proposed development, which is currently out to a second round of public consultation, includes a 17-storey new Bastion House, creating 40,000 square metres of office space, a performance and events area, and additional cultural and learning spaces. So, Muyiwa, we talk a lot about embodied carbon on this show. It's a massive issue gaining growing recognition to the point it now appears a private member's bill to regulate and reduce embodied carbon in new buildings over 1,000 metres squared is reportedly making a bit of a comeback in Parliament. With such growing awareness of the environmental costs of demolition and rebuild, should the City of London Corporation rethink these plans?
For listeners out there who aren't like trained in built environment, architecture, engineering, I'll explain what embodied carbon is. It means CO2 and energy used to extract, transport raw materials and also manufacture it. So when we're talking about it in this case, a retrofit or demolition of a status building, reading a couple of articles about it in the AJ and things, the City of London quoted... So saying it is choosing to make this carbon investment unlock the greatest amount of benefits at the site. So it's choosing to spend this carbon so that it can reap the social rewards from it. And just looking at the plans itself, it looks like it's building more offices. And I ask myself, does the City of London need more offices? I don't want to comment too much on what the City of London are doing, but in a sort of broader sense, retrofit should be first, and embodied carbon is going to be the most significant criteria you have to take into consideration, and therefore the RIBA should take a stance on what embodied carbon looks like and how to count it, but also how you justify demolishing projects when we know embodied carbon is the main factor for how we operate in the industry.
So we're talking about the City of London Corporation. It's the local authority for the Square Mile, an extraordinary place with lots of very interesting buildings. One of them is the Grade 1 listed Lloyds Building, a real amazing piece of high-tech architectural heritage, all shiny and technical with its services on the outside of the building. It's been reported that Roger Sturt Harbour and Partners, that's the practice set up by Richard Rogers, who designed the building originally back in the 70s, is drawing up plans for the transformation of this purpose-built structure, potentially into a hotel, according to the reports that have been published online. So the occupier hasn't decided whether what they want to do with the building in the future. And reportedly, the owner has begun looking into ways to repurpose this iconic structure. So if that could be repurposed and made into like a hotel or something else, then why can't the same thing happen here with the Museum of London?
Those were the ideals of the high-tech movement, as I understood it, that they were building it so that it could be flexible enough. In my previous practice, Grimshaw, who was also one of the high-tech movement pioneers, retrofitted the Herman Miller building into the Bath, University of Bath Art School. And those are the ideals that they were espousing in the 80s and 90s. And now it's good that we are now seeing... The ideas come to life 30, 40 years after. Post-COVID, we still need a sense of community, a sense of a place. And the high street and these urban city centers need to create that sense of space, sense of place, sense of belonging. And I don't think retrofitting or demolishing to build new offices is that type of sense of community that is needed post-COVID, post-pandemic.
The Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, planned to build a treehouse for an eye-watering £150,000. It was reported in the Times this week in a story that blew up over social media and was later picked up by the Metro, Guardian, Independent and The Mirror. According to reports, in 2020, Boris and his wife Carrie Johnson had plans drawn up for a treetop playhouse for their son, built using expensive bulletproof glass that was to be funded by a Conservatives Party donor. These proposals for the grounds at Chequers, the country house of the Prime Minister, were later scrapped when its visibility to a nearby road was flagged as a security issue. However, Downing Street sources claimed the Prime Minister was also warned about the optics of spending £150,000 on a treehouse during a housing crisis. The surge of media interest around the treehouse makes an ironic comparison to another report out this week which didn't quite get as much attention, but is also to do with expensive trophy homes that are mostly unused and unavailable to live in. The local news blog My London reported that £130 billion worth of residential property sits empty within the capital. This equates to 87,731 vacant homes across 32 boroughs, and shockingly, one borough alone has nearly 5,000 empty homes. This data, published by the curiously named CIA Landlord Insurance, shows that Southwark has 4,976 vacant houses, 1,211 of which are owned by the council itself, according to 2021 reports. So, Muyiwa, let's start off with this news about Boris Johnson's £150,000 treehouse. How much money is that in terms of a project of this scale, even if it did require bulletproof glass? Have you heard of any ways designers and planners have used similar budgets more effectively?
Yes, where we can use that money more effectively is by creating ways to get better engaged with the communities. I have friends who are working on different projects that looks at digitizing community engagement. And that is the best way to bring people along with you, but also make sure that they share in the gifts and profits and the riches of the local authority that they live in. And that's one way I would see in spending a sort of astronomical amount of money like that. And I do think it's a little bit out of touch. I think that's the only thing I can really say, really. It's out of touch. It feels ridiculous. It is ridiculous. But it's the kind of way that things happen in the Tory donor partnership.
So obviously the comparison here is to the shocking scale of inequality in the capital. This report has shown that there's nearly 88,000 vacant homes. Statistics from the Combined Homelessness and Information Network have shown that between April 2020 and March 21, there were 11,018 people seen sleeping rough on the streets of London. These figures show that rough sleeping has increased 94% in the last decade. We often think about the housing crisis as a problem resulting from the lack of housing. How do these latest figures reframe this debate in terms of the number of empty homes?
I've seen these figures reported over the past few years, and it's just that lack of access to good housing that has never been really sorted out since the 1980s with Thatcher's plans of selling council housing and no reinvestment in public housing stock. And I think it's also that mindset since the 80s that, you know, having owning a home is the best investment that you can have. You know, it's like the English version to the American dream. And I want to bring it back to what the RIB can do. At the moment, not very much, because we are a membership body, and what we can do is set up a culture within our membership organization to work with people who are providing housing, better housing, affordable housing,
We're now on to the culture section. So coming up in London's architecture and built environment culture, the big thing is next week, it's the launch of the Accelerate exhibition. This is Open City's flagship education program, helping youngsters aged 16 to 18 from underrepresented backgrounds get into architecture school and get on and have a career as a designer and creator of our future cities. The exhibition is launching on Thursday. It's happening here in Design District in North Greenwich in the C1 building, for those that don't know it. This is the Architecture 00 designed building right at the front with a basketball court on the roof. And we've got the ground floor where we're going to be having an exhibition launch. It's going to be a really, really cool show. You can see the drawings, the models, the artworks and the inspirational material that's been put together by people who participated in this program. So it's launching on Thursday the 7th of July and the exhibition will be open to check out until the 13th of July. So another big thing that's going on in culture right now is the Sun and Sea installation, which is at the Albany in Deptford. It's basically an indoor beach, which is there until the 10th of July. It's a durational artwork with opera singing that kind of unfolds on a loop over several hours. It's a piece that was Lithuania's national entry for the 2019 Venice Biennale, which actually won the Golden Lion. It was like the number one installation for the art Biennale, not the architecture Biennale. And it's been described as a kind of urgent exploration of our relationship with the planet, the threat climate change presents, and the dangers we face if it is ignored. I've seen a lot of photos and video of this. I've read the script for the song. I haven't actually been along. I'm trying to visit later this week. But has it caught your attention, this one?
Yeah, it has. And it's in Lewisham, South London, which is where I grew up in. So any opportunity to go down to South London, I welcome it with open arms.
Fantastic. Well, Buyiwa, it's been a fantastic pleasure to feature you on the Lundown this week. We hope you can join us again in the future. Where should our listeners go to stay up to speed on all the things you're doing? Is there a socials they should be checking out or a website?
Yes, definitely. So I have a website that I put together with the help of some colleagues for the campaign. It's called speakupforthefuturearchitect.co. That's speakupforthefuturearchitect.co. And you can reach me on my socials, on LinkedIn, Muyiwa Oki, Instagram, Muyiwa.Oki, and Twitter, Muyiwa_Oki.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again for being on the show. It's been an immense pleasure, and hope to see you again.
You've been listening to The Lundown, a show from Open City, rounding up the big stories in architecture and the built environment each week in London. If you've enjoyed the show and want to know more about any of the stories we've discussed, we recommend subscribing to the Architects Journal, which has covered all these issues and many more too. You can find the show on Twitter or Instagram at @OpenCityLondon or by using the hashtag Lundown, LNDDWN. Open City receives no public funding, so if you want to support our work, please go to open-city.org.uk/support and sign up as an Open City friend. Open City is dedicated to making London a more open, accessible, and equitable city.
The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.